You are like Lee to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to a special mini edition of the Gru Cafe. This is a special, we are all excited about Mass Effect 3, so we thought we'd come talk about it to each other rather than continually boring our significant others, friends, families, and random acquaintances in the subway line with how excited we are. So, today's topic is primarily Mass Effect 3, but with also various excerpts into other games, the Dragonware, Bioware games like Dragon Age, and related topics. So, just a fair warning, anything related to either Dragon Age or Mass Effect that has been released is fair game. So if you're somehow listening to this, but you're, you know, don't want to be spoiled for Mass Effect 2 or something, you probably don't want to listen to this podcast yet. So basically, anything that's actually out is fine. We're not going to be going into, internet spoilers or anything like that, because I think we both more or less have tried to stay spoiler-free for the game.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't even play the single-player demo.
Oh, I didn't go that far. I played the demo several times, four times or so, and started it several more. More because I wanted to try out all the different like hairdos and things and see how they look in-game so I can decide which one I like the best. Because the little character creation.
I'm the only person that never touches that stuff. I've played, really? I've played every one of these games, and this is true pretty much in the all the BioWare stuff, but particularly with Mass Effect, I've been default Shepard pretty much every time. I just don't care enough to miss. Well, part of the problem is I'm terrible at these tools, Whatever I make ends up infinitely uglier than the default dude who's not exactly like.
It is
winning any handsome boy modeling school awards, but he's not as flicked as the genetic defects I managed to make. So I've taken the defaults both times, and I was happy to see they finally,
give us
a default female ship, because the default femme ship was not very attractive in the previous games, because they just didn't put the time in like they did with the male Shepard. So now I can have two characters that don't look like genetic misfits.
It is pretty easy to make a complete gargoyle in those character creators.
Oh, God, yeah.
Really careful.
I've been tempted to do it on purpose just to see how ugly a dude can I actually make, and will people react to him? It would be better if they did. They don't, which is kind of sad.
So anyway, yes, the character creator in BioWare's games, it is pretty easy to accidentally make something that looks fine in the character creator, and then when you get in-game, you're horrified by the misshapen thing that you have wrought.
Yes, and that's, I seem to have a knack for that. I make plastic-faced gargoyles at every available opportunity. I had the same problem with the ones in... I'm terrible at any of these games that are like, oh, we gave you 1,000 sliders to fix your facial feature. I'm like, don't. I don't need that. I don't want to make my own person in Skyrim. You've got artists on staff, right? Just make me some attractive people, and I'll play one of those.
Yeah. If you've ever played EVE Online, they have this amazingly sophisticated one in EVE Online where you can do just all kinds of really cool stuff, but you never see your little person. You're represented by a spaceship the whole time in that game. So I really don't know why they wasted time building it. Because all it does is it goes into your like user picture, which is tiny.
That's funny.
I don't know if they're planning on rolling out something where you can actually get out and walk around eventually, or what.
I know they've got a
really funny.
They've got a shooter coming out, but I don't think it's actually.
I think it's going to be a console shooter, isn't it?
It's a PS3 thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually like share any account. Like you can't tie it to your Eve dude. I don't think it's.
I don't know. I haven't actually played EVE in a while because I hit my Memorpga like event horizon that I always get to where I can no longer do meaningful solo work, and I don't like any of you people or don't have, or the people that I do like aren't available at the same time as me or whatever it is, so I can't really meaningfully multiplayer, so I just kind of give it up.
Yeah.
Although I do like on Eve, they basically just suspend your account and keep it forever, and then whenever you want to go back, you can just reactivate it.
Yeah, WoW does the same thing.
Every once in a while, I'm like, ooh, I should go back, and then I'm like,
No, I shouldn't. That's
maybe
terrible.
Not.
Yeah, but, I never tried Eve. I've once I heard somebody describe it as spreadsheets in space, I decided I wasn't that interested.
It can be. It's also basically the game where part of the game mechanic is people are assholes.
Yeah, I get enough of that, you know, driving to work.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, if I wanted road rage, I would go out in the real world. Although it's really fascinating to read about.
Yes, yes. The various scams and piracy and all that stuff, highly entertaining. Oh.
I actually did kind of enjoy it in the little kind of tutorial ramp-up section quite a bit. And then I got to the point where I could no longer play by myself and was kind of annoyed. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll go play Mass Effect again.
Yeah, as I am doing at the moment.
Indeed, indeed. Tuffley is so, like, every time he comes downstairs, he's like, are you starting another playthrough? Come on, how many do you have? I'm like, a couple.
Well, there's 6 whole character classes. You gotta have one of each.
I know, right? I have to decide which one I like the most. Sentinel.
I'm actually trying to finish my playthrough with an infiltrator, which is what I probably will play first.
I liked infiltrator the best in the first game, but I think Sentinel has a bit of an edge in the second one. I don't know. Like, I'm about to finish my infiltrator playthrough. In the second one, too. Like, I have one where I'm about to go get the IFF that I'm going to wrap up before tomorrow. And then, because I've done all the other loyalty missions and whatever. And then I just started another one, like, before I logged on today. Because I wanted to make one with a different name, because they're all spinoffs of my original Mass Effect 1 playthrough. And I'm starting to lose track of which Meredith Shepherd is which.
I can see how that would be confusing, yeah.
You know, because I have the one from the first playthrough from Mass Effect 1 and one from the second playthrough from Mass Effect 1. And then, of course, I have a couple branches and it's gotten... I'm like, okay, this is the Sentinel from 2010 that... Yeah.
It's possible you have a problem. Only possible, mind you. But it is certainly possible.
Just possible.
It's the nature of these games. They've made games that are infinitely replayable. She's worse than I am. I always thought, oh, you know, I'm a huge BioWare fanboy. I play the shit out of these games. I love them. And then when, I guess Dragon Age 1 was really the first one she spent a lot of time with.
Uh-huh. Alistair.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it. It's all about Alistair.
We've had discussions.
We've had many discussions. but yeah, and so she hits an insomniac jag, you know, once the game's been out a couple of weeks or whatever, and I'm going to bed, and she's like, oh, I'm gonna play a little while longer, and I get up the next morning, she's finished a playthrough and started another one. And this continued pretty much nonstop for a couple of weeks until she had... Oh, God, I don't know. She played almost all the Origins in the first game all the way through, or all of and some of them twice. And, yeah, yeah. And then she's gotten that way with Mass Effect as well.
Yeah. I only beat the first Dragon Age once all the way through. I played each of the Origins through, and then I beat the game the first time with the Wood Elf, I forget what they're called, the ones that aren't in the city. And that was the one I beat it with the first time. And then, what was it? I played the dwarf noble a ways because I liked her. She was kind of neat. And then the one I went farthest with besides that, I think, was the human noble because I decided I wanted to try to be queen.
Yes.
But I kind of lost interest in that after a while and kind of left it because that game is so long. It takes forever.
It is. It's a lot easier for me to replay Mass Effect because it is so much. It's a much shorter game.
I always get to the part where you have to go in the woods, and I'm like, man, I don't want to play this section again. And then I stop. It's either the woods or the fade. Those are the two parts I don't like about that game, and I always get hung up on one or the other of them.
the fade totally murders my interest in lots of replays.
I don't know. It's annoying. The first time through, you're kind of like, oh, this is interesting. And then after that, you're like, oh, now I have to be a mouse again. Whoop-de-doo.
But yeah, she's, Den's pretty excited about Mass Effect 3. I don't know if she's decided what her opener will be as far as a first playthrough or which import she's going to take from the previous games.
Yeah, I'm really torn.
And I had a problem with a very long problem with my gamer profile back in 2010.
I remember that, yeah.
And I lost
two versions of you on my contact list.
Yes, I lost my when I lost access to my original profile. I also lost access to all my save games.
Ooh.
And so my original Mass Effect 1 stuff was all gone.
Oh.
And so Mass Effect 2 came out, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to wait. You know, yeah. I'm not going to replay the first game just to get to the new one. I want to play the new hotness.
Yeah, because I'll say for all of my Mass Effect love, I've only played the first game through twice.
And what's funny is...
And there's a lot of kind of annoying bits.
Oh, yeah. And for people that didn't know or didn't get into it at the beginning, when 2 originally came out, if you weren't importing a game, then it just had a sort of set of default assumptions it would make about the big decisions.
Right, because they didn't make the Genesis DLC for several years.
Right.
That was when they took it out for PlayStation, wasn't it, that they made that? It
might have been. I'm not sure. And yeah. And the thing is, and I don't know if you ever played with a non-imported character, but the ME2 default assumptions are that you were just a raging space racist for the entire first game.
Nice!
Garrett, you know, Rex is dead, the council is dead, everybody hates you, and everybody thinks humanity is reprehensible and, you know, all this other crazy shit. And so, yeah, you're basically playing the absolute worst possible set of decisions ME1 would let you make.
Well, that's awful, because Rex is great in ME2.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, when you go down there and he greets you and he's all happy to see you, I made a little noise of happiness.
Yeah, and I got to play through with some stand-in, you know, for the chief of the Erdnot tribe.
Erdnot Bob.
Yeah, Erdnot Bob. Erdnot not Rex.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had to eventually go back and play through ME1 just to get a decent set of assumptions. And then about the time I finished that playthrough, they came out with this Genesis thing that just lets you pick which way you want the decisions to have gone.
One I just started, I played through the Genesis to do some new stuff. Because I wanted to change your name, and you can't change your name unless you go all the way back start a brand new one.
Yeah, I have. So I have my. I finally went back and replayed ME1 as an infiltrator and imported that guy.
That's good.
And he is super Paragon-y. And currently finishing up. I'm about where you are on the playthrough you were talking about. I've got to go get the IFF device and I've done almost all the loyalty missions. I got to make a quick trip to the Citadel to finish the last couple up.
Yeah. Well, my thing was, the first time I play, I usually try not to look online for anything unless I'm totally, totally stuck. Because I like to just let the story unfold. And so the first time I played, after they kidnapped my crew, I hadn't done, like, half the loyalty missions. I had been alternating between, you know, character stuff, loyalty stuff, and plot stuff.
Yes.
And so I applied, you know, the rule of RPG time, which was, this will still be here when I'm done.
Right.
I'll get around to it later. And so I went and finished up all the side quests before I did it, and my whole crew was dead, and I was so upset.
I can imagine.
And Morden died.
Oh. See, that's the other thing. I didn't look anything up the first time.
You were supposed to put on all the different teams and stuff.
Yeah, I just kind of winged it, you know, going with, oh, well, you know, this seems reasonable. And by blind chance, I claim no talent here, by blind chance made a set of selections. I got everybody through it the first time.
Well, that's great.
And then ever since then, I went, oh, well, you know, I got through it the first time, no trouble. Every time I've tried to play through it since then, I've lost people.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not, I apparently made some decision that time that I haven't replicated.
Yeah.
But for this playthrough, I will probably have to look it up because I'm not taking the chance that any of these people are dead in ME3. And this is my import game.
I was actually really upset. You would think, because since most of them don't talk, you know, the Cerberus crew, you'd think it wouldn't really make the difference. But after I was back with, you know, my empty lab, and it was so sad. Like, it was so empty. Like, all the little people were dead, and I felt really bad about it. So I had to go do a new playthrough and save them all.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially the little engineers down in the engineering deck. I love them.
Seriously, who else am I gonna wreck for poker money?
I know. There's so many little conversations you run into, and they're just... I mean, I have to give props to BioWare for the writing that I care about these characters that I can only have one real scripted conversation with, and then they just have some lines that trigger when I come into proximity. But based on those lines, I like them so much, I'm willing to play the game again to save them from the being goo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Also, it's creepy when there's nobody there but you and the party members. It's weird.
Yeah, that would be pretty screwy. I've got to finish the... this playthrough and then I've got to see about, I've got to go back to my other save, which was sort of a renegade-y fem ship that I played without import, and decide if I like that or if, because of all those bad initial assumptions, I need to mess around with Genesis and make another one.
I've never played a male shepherd just because I like the fem ship so much. It's worth it.
I think I hear a lot of people complain. They're like, oh, well, you know, Jennifer Hale's voice acting is so much better. I really think they're pretty much of a piece. But the lines that they deliver well are not the same lines.
Yeah.
So there's places where I think she's much better and places where I think he's much better, and it's all kind of a wash.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely – he's got a better delivery on some of the really excellent sarcasm lines. And since those are the ones I kind of live for, I've tended to play him, but yeah, I try to keep one of each, ready to go forward.
The only thing that would convince me to do a male shepherd playthrough, I think, is the chance to romance Tally.
But I
can watch it on YouTube. You know? I haven't wanted to go through the whole thing just for that. Plus, I live in hope that in Mass Effect 3, I can let my fem shep romance Tally, and then I'll have the best of both worlds. Like, I'm already another species. Why should she care that I'm a girl?
I was about to say, what does gender matter once you've already had to, you know, bypass environment suits?
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
Like, I can sync my Omnitool with your nerve stimulation program. It'll work out, hon.
Worst come online ever.
Did you play Lair of the Shadow Broker?
I did, actually, and it made me rethink. I almost reevaluated my plan to go after the geeky space engineer, because I didn't actually... I mean, Liara was all right in the first game, but I found her kind of dull. She's just not... I don't know. She was just a little too babe in the woods, kind of naive to be all that interesting to me.
Yeah. But the way they develop her, she becomes so interesting.
Yeah, she's
and
become Lair
of
a
the
whole
Shadow
lot more
Broker
interesting.
Is awesome. I think that's one of the better DLCs I've seen for any game, period. And it's certainly my favorite of all the ones that have come out for Mass Effect.
Yeah, I would have to say so, too. I'm actually, one of the things I'm doing before I go finish loyalty missions is the not terribly entertaining Firewalker and Project Overlord stuff they did.
Oh, yeah. I've played through Overlord once. I haven't played all the way. I've done a couple of bits of Firewalker. I'm not, like, crazy about the Hammerhead.
Yeah, Aaron was not a big fan of the Hammerhead either.
I mean, it's better than the Mako, but that's not saying much. I'm never really a vehicle section person that much either, because it seems like they never handle very well.
Well, yeah, there's something about vehicles in the Mass Effect universe. They're all filled with helium, and I don't know, it's really strange.
It's like they have giant marbles that just kind of roll around inside untethered. Or there's a cow strapped on the roof or something.
Cow strapped on the roof? Well, all right.
I don't know. But, Yeah, I mean, I'll probably finish it at some point just to see it. And right. I did Overlord. Overlord was okay. Have you played Arrival?
No, I was saving it till after I was finished with the main game.
Yeah. Arrival's pretty good. It's interesting. And it's, it tees up, from what I've seen at the beginning of the 3 demo, it seems that the demo goes pretty much from Arrival. So it actually kind of is a connecting story, which is neat.
That is cool, yeah. Yeah, and I that's part of why I haven't messed with it too much, is I'm trying to, my plan, honestly, is to get the main story done with this game and probably sit on Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, like, you know, pop this in and take the, because I can't imagine Arrival takes more than an hour or two to play through.
It doesn't take too long. It's kind of cool because there's like a stealthy section, and then there's like a fighty section.
Yeah, if Den's playthroughs are where she wants them, so that she doesn't need to lay claim to the console in the next couple of days, then I will probably look to like do Arrival the day before.
Yeah.
And then roll into the third one with that sort of fresh. But I'm a little curious to see how it all works out with the transition. The stuff I've seen in the trailers, obviously Cerberus have gone back to being bad guys.
Yeah. Well, they were always kind of bad guys.
Well, I mean, but they were...
You're temporarily aligned bad
they're,
guys.
They're, I guess, more... Not that they've gone back to being bad guys, because you said they were always pretty shady, but they've gone back to being actively opposed to you.
Yeah, back to being your antagonist.
Right, and... Yeah. You know, they're bringing back all these crew members from the first game, and almost none from the second game.
Yeah.
And... Honestly, the couple they're bringing back from the first game, or a couple of the ones they're bringing from the first game, I could really do without. Ashley and Caden were two of the most uninteresting characters they ever put in a BioWare game. The only thing I'm looking forward to about Ashley's return is telling her that she got kicked to the curb for the hoofy chick in the environment suit.
or Liara. You could do either one.
Yeah, yeah. Den had a problem in that she actually didn't ever trigger any of the romance scenes in the first game. But Caden firmly believes they had a relationship, and he's really creepy about it when you show up in the second game. And there's like a picture of him on her desk in the captain's cabin. And right when she finally triggered the Garrus romance scene, her one true love in the Mass Effect universe.
I heard that.
The picture of Caden on the desk got put face down.
Yeah.
Where it remained.
Yeah, I was so tickled when I realized that you could actually romance Garrus that time. I was like, yes! Hooray!
Yeah, oh yeah, it pretty much made the game for Den. That was her big thing.
I think a lot of people feel that way. He seems to be, from what I've seen, probably the most popular choice for the...
He's kind of a no-brainer because, I mean...
Well, Fane really, is interesting.
Fane's okay, but he's just so... weird, and kind of needy and freakish.
Well, he's gonna die soon, so the first time I played through, I went with him, I tried to go with him figuring that he was gonna die soon and then I could go back to somebody else.
Wow, that's amazing.
I call it thinking like an Asari.
Okay. Yes, let's romance the terminally ill dude because, hey, he'll be gone and there'll always be time to go back to another one. That's
that was my metagaming thought, anyway.
That's amazing. I love it.
Well, it's like the couple you see on the Citadel when you're talking about buying a fish, and she goes, what's important is to treasure the time you have for the fish. And he's like, is this the lifespan talk? I am not having the lifespan talk. Which just cracked me up. There's actually a lot of really kind of neat little moments that you overhear, I think, in too, that I really liked. Like there's another one with the Salarian talking to the Asari. And at first it's just kind of funny. They're kind of bickering about what souvenir to buy. And then he says something like, I just want you to remember me. I mean, I'm almost 35 and you remember, you know, they die when they're 40 or whatever. And you're like, aw, that's really sad.
Yeah, that and the... the Solarian Bachelor Party. It's highly entertaining.
Oh my gosh, that cracks me up. I listen to it every time I go in there.
And Den's a big fan of the Turian. Is it a Turian and an Asari? I forget.
Turian
the
and the Quarian, I think.
Yes, Turian and the Quarian, that's it.
Fleet and Flotilla.
Oh, yeah. Fleet and Flotilla.
I also really like it after you beat Lair of the Shadow Broker when you can go in and read all the dossiers on people.
Yes, that's some of the most amazing incidental writing in any of their games. I laughed for quite a while reading Grunt's internet search history.
Yes.
That he's obsessed with like T-Rexes and sharks and war movies and likes to read Hemingway. And then he spells everything wrong.
Yes, and Legion's epic multiplayer video game profile.
Oh, I'll have to go back. See, I did Shadow Broker without him around. I haven't picked him up yet. So I'll have to go back.
There's this lengthy list of like basically his gamer profile.
That's awesome.
And his username is like Infiltrator in 7 or something.
I also liked that the what's her name, the thief Goto.
Oh yeah, I liked her a lot.
Writes haikus about watching Jacob work out.
Yes.
Which is funny as hell.
I actually wish that they had more stuff built in with Kasumi, because I really liked her. I thought part of it, I think, is they had a really good actress voicing her.
Yes.
She came across as being very warm and kind of, like, you get the impression that she and she and my femshep would kind of be buddies and hang out and drink in the observatory and chat about boys and girls.
Yeah, she's a very interesting character that didn't get enough follow-up.
Yeah.
I guess there's only so much you can do when you're adding a character.
DLC, yeah. But Zaid I was really uninterested in. Like, I'm kind of bored. I mean, he had a good voice. Like, the actor was good. It was, what's his name, from Buffy.
Right.
And he did what he could, but there just wasn't all that much to do with him.
No, and especially if you've played enough BioWare games, the whole Zaid archetype is pretty familiar. I mean, he's HK-47, and he's, you know, it's just that, oh, look, grizzled space mercenary who's a hard ass, you know, and hates everybody.
Between Garrus and Thane, you pretty much have his role covered in the party anyway, so you don't really ever need to play with him much.
Right, yeah, skill-wise, he didn't bring anything useful or terribly interesting to the mix.
Because Kasumi, actually, if you leveled up her Shadow Strike thing, that became like a one-shot kill on a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was actually really... You could actually use her as kind of a sub-tech person pretty effectively, which I liked.
Yeah, I took her on a couple of the sort of incidental missions just to kind of see how those abilities played out.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went back to my standing Tally and Grunt party.
It's funny. But, my standing party always changes depending on the class I'm playing.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but because, like, actually with my Infiltrator playthrough, I'm finding that Garrus and Miranda is pretty much my go-to party. Because
I find
overloads and a warp besides I've got, you know.
Yeah, I basically, as an Infiltrator, don't play with Garrus very much because there's so much overlap with what I do already.
Yeah.
But
maybe I use Overlord.
Yeah, it's really doesn't.
Which is
it doesn't really matter.
That's true. You can pretty much do it with whatever.
Yeah, I think that only really changes if you jack the difficulty up to insane, and then you really have to optimize.
I never play higher than normal.
That's
not why I'm there.
Not often.
You know? The only time I generally, my rule of thumb, and a lot of kind of hardcore gamers will probably die, but I usually start on easy and raise the difficulty when it starts to be easy enough to annoy me.
It's not a bad approach.
You know? Because...
Honestly, I'm the same way. Well, I usually just go with whatever the default is. The only thing I ever go play super insane difficulty stuff on is first-person shooters, and that's...
Right.
It's
that's kind of the point of them.
Well, yeah, and there's not – your enemy AIs are never good enough to make that terribly challenging.
Yeah.
You know, they're always going to be kind of dumb, and if you just play cautiously, you'll be fine and everything will work out. This game, though, just the sheer odds stacked against you will nuke you in a hurry trying to play on the harder difficulties. And I just haven't found
it. Even on normal, there are certain levels that I die at a fair bit.
Like,
there's a couple places where I think, especially the places where you get swarmed by husks at the state, it's really easy to die if you're not careful. Because one husk by itself is not a challenge at all. But if you get four or five of them right up on you, you will die fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I find the, I'm trying to think the name of the things. The big, huge collector things.
The Praetorians?
Yes.
Those are really tough.
Those are a pain.
The first time I played, I died so many times in Horizon, the first time you fight one of those.
I can imagine. Yeah, they still give me fits. Wrong. I have found, though, the imported character, just that little XP boost and that sort of thing that you get.
Yeah, it makes
for importing makes a huge difference, because a lot of these fights
levels up.
Yeah, because I distinctly remember in my first playthrough when I didn't have an import, man, I had to struggle to keep like heavy weapon ammo on me because I was constantly having to use the big cannons to kill these things. And I think I've maybe fired it twice in this playthrough, and I'm level 30 and almost done.
Yeah.
So it definitely makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. It's interesting. I actually played two complete playthroughs of Mass Effect 1, and I still didn't get to level 60. I beat it, and I was almost level 60. I was level 59 and, like, 3/4.
Yeah, I suspect it's difficulty-driven, because I know you get more XP.
Probably, because I was only playing at, like, normal difficulty. But the issue is there's a finite amount of XP in the galaxy. Like, there's only so many enemies.
Right.
And once you've gone to all the planets and done all that, there's nothing else you can do.
Right.
You know, in the front, you're done. Which, being used to games where there's, you know, infinite respawns, kind of threw me the first time. I was like, wait, what do you mean there's no more?
Yeah, it's actually something that, and I kind of get why they don't do it, and given the nature of the plot and the story, it makes sense. But I would kind of like the ability to just go dork around and do stuff after I'm done saving the universe. You know? But there's
I've actually saved most of the N7 missions in Mass Effect 2 to do after I've done the main plot line. Like when I just want to tool around in the Normandy and have some fun.
What's funny is that the very first time when I did play through the first time, like the N7 things are such that it's actually possible to miss them entirely.
Uh-huh.
Like you never find the first one, and then you never get sent off on that whole chain.
Right.
And so I just
have to scan for them.
Yeah, I mean, I beat the game and was like, okay, well, that was cool. And I mean, it wasn't short or anything. It took, I don't know, 20 plus hours or whatever it took, but. And I get done with the game and I'm like, okay, cool. And then I'm talking to people and they're like, well, what'd you think of this N7? And I'm like, think of the what? you know, and I'm suddenly finding I managed to miss probably 2/3 of the available side quests in the game the first time around.
You must not have scanned for resources much.
Well, see, I did, but like if I found a planet with an anomaly, I didn't care about the anomaly. I just wanted the minerals. So I would... I would just be like, okay, screw that. I'll get back to that later. But right now I need my precious platinum. and so, I get done with them, and then I would never, I guess, think to come back and mess with them again. Yeah. So, I missed out. I thought, wow, that's a great sequel, but it was a little shorter than the first one.
Well, even with all the stuff, it is still shorter than the first one, I think.
I think so, too, but I think that's mostly to do with not having to deal with the terrible, terrible Mako bullshit.
Oh, my God, I hate the Mako. I'm not sure if it's shorter or if it just has better pacing.
I haven't actually measured
the time spent because, I mean, when you look at the first one, I mean, there's three main quest missions, basically,
right.
Three or four, and then there's the little side quests you can go to and all the time you can spend running around the Citadel and whatnot. But, I mean, 2 has, what, 3 or 4 different hub worlds you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, I mean, I thought that they did a good job putting a lot more variety in the side quests in 2 than they did in 1. Because in 1, every cave was the same cave. I mean,
yeah.
And we've talked about this, like, in Mass Effect, I buy it. Like, it's okay for me in-game because it's all supposed to be prefabricated, like, you know, structures.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense that everybody just picked, you know, mining package number one or research station package number three and plopped it down on whatever planet they're on. But then in Dragon Age 2, where all of the mines were the same, no.
Yeah, yeah, that was a little sloppy.
They got demerits big time from me on that one.
Yeah, my hope is, you know, we'll see a little more variety. And I'm really intrigued to see how the multiplayer thing works out. Because
I am too.
In the demo, I've played it a good bit, and it's interesting and it's a lot of fun, but a lot of it, like with most multiplayer shooter type things, is going to hinge on like how much variety there really is.
Right.
Because if it's the same, like two or three maps over and over and over again,
right,
it will lose its charm pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't really have any idea what to expect there. They haven't given sufficient hints.
Now, I'm interested in seeing how it goes. This may actually be a multiplayer that I will actually play.
Oh, I hope so.
Because I'm usually not a multiplayer person, but that one intrigues me.
And if you're capable of handling the combat in Mass Effect, then you're capable of handling the multiplayer.
Right.
It's pretty much the same system. There's not any sort of new skill set you would have to develop to pull it off.
I mean, it took me, I had a little bit of learning curve the first time I tried it on the demo, because I usually use the shoulder buttons to do powers, and you have to use the shortcut buttons, which I guess makes sense because you can't pause the multiplayer. But once I got used to that, then I did pretty well, I think.
Yeah,
I died a couple times, but I was fortunate to randomly spawn in with somebody who was like a level 15, so they would always come revive me. It's like, thanks, dude.
Yeah,
I'll try to hit somebody for you.
Get the hang of it. It's pretty slick. I've mainly messed around with just a couple of the classes, but I've seen a lot of them.
It's hard to be an infiltrator in that, because you need so much time to look through the scope and go to the different view.
It's actually, and this is something I've been discovering playing ME2 again, is the infiltrator, unlike the first game, you really, to make the infiltrator a ton of fun, have to divorce yourself from thinking of them as the sniper.
Yeah.
Because I, like in the multiplayer, I don't use the sniper rifle. It's a pistol and a submachine gun, and I run right up in people's faces, invisible, and punch them. And go that way.
Tactical cloak is a pretty sweet ability.
Yeah.
Especially when you leveled up to give you a bunch of bonus damage.
Right. And it doesn't really do you that much good at long range. It's really designed for you to just get up in something's face and punch it out.
Yeah.
I
am intrigued by melee being more effective in the third game.
Yeah, I'm a little curious about that too. The little orange omni-tool blade thing looks kind of fun.
Playing in the first-person demo, I actually did use it to get myself out of a tight corner a couple of times.
Yeah, and I used it in the multiplayer from stealth.
Yeah.
Because you can do really brutally unhappy things to people with that thing.
That's like sneaking. Assassin's Creed in space.
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
less jumping off of buildings, but just as much stabbing.
Ubisoft, take that idea. It would rock.
Yeah, I've already basically committed my budget towards buying the third one now that it's been released or announced, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And they didn't pick the era I'd have picked, but I'm willing to give them a chance because it looks pretty awesome.
I've really enjoyed that series, and I thought they've consistently made it better as time went on, so I'm willing to hang in there with them as long as they'll keep doing it and not make it stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to pick up the most recent one. I haven't had the chance to mess with it, but
I got it and I played it real hard for a week, and then Skyrim came out and I haven't gone back.
That was pretty much my problem. I had Skyrim and Modern Warfare and a couple of other things all due out, and I'm just like, you know what? I'll save it and pick it up used later. And then I had a friend of mine send me a chat last week. He's like, oh, you know, this place has got them used for $25, and I'm like, yeah, but Mass Effect comes out in a week.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll keep waiting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've always been a big RPG person. That's always really been my primary genre in console games. Mm-hmm. Computer games, you know, it's more strategy and sims, but and adventure stuff. But in consoles, I've always been a big RPG person. And it's interesting to me because there's the two kind of big console RPG makers right now, Bethesda and BioWare.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like if Bethesda and BioWare had a game baby, that would be like the platonic ideal of RPGs. Because they're both really cool in different ways.
Yeah, and it's almost gotten to the point where their styles and decisions and design are so distinctive, they're verging on being sort of subgenres of each other as opposed to even making the same kind of game.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we talked about this, because the thing about Skyrim is, I mean, good Lord, I think my save game in Skyrim was like 250 hours before I got tired of it. And I haven't even, I'm like two-thirds of the way through the main quest line, and I haven't even done, you know, all the, like, the mages quest line and stuff. But eventually, there's so much you can do, and you get so overpowered that nothing you do actually matters anymore.
Right.
Because you can kill everything with minimal problems. You have epic, you know, armor of the gods. You have epic weapons of the gods. You can, you know, make potions that make you invulnerable. And, I mean, I simultaneously sided with the Empire and killed the Emperor, and nobody seemed to think that that was a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, that's the place where I think Bethesda really has some stuff to learn. Your game gets a lot more interesting when all these massive decisions people make matter at all. You know?
Or that there are actually things that contradict each other. Like, I think it would have been a more interesting game with more replay value if you could only take over one of the factions instead of all of them.
All of them, right.
You know,
yeah, because that's why their games, my save files on their games are so huge, is I know I have to do everything on one playthrough because there is no way I will stay interested enough to play twice.
Yeah. Well, like Fallout 3, I love Fallout. I loved all the Fallout games, but I'm not going to do another playthrough of Fallout ever.
No.
You know.
No, when New Vegas came out, I sold it. And when I finish New Vegas someday, I will sell that too.
I never did beat New Vegas. I got to, like, I'm right on the verge of being the point of no return for the final quests.
Right.
And then I think I paused because I wanted to do some DLC or something, and then something else came out, and I was like, oh, I'll get back to this someday.
Yeah, and the other thing with Bethesda is, like, I got a little bit into Skyrim, but then the, oh, hey, we don't actually have a QA department until after the game ships, problems started to set in. And I actually had to delete my very first character because of a problem they didn't fix until 4.5 months later.
Ooh,
it's in the most recent patch, and it's a game-breaking bug.
Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate that I didn't get the game-breaking bug in New Vegas where you enter Vegas for the first time and then your game is irretrievably hosed.
Yeah. So I've actually, Skyrim is sitting in a corner thinking about what it's done, and I will play it someday when it's been sufficiently patched and there's not a Mass Effect game to play.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, because even though the Mass Effect games are a lot shorter, and normally I like a big, huge game that I can really sink my teeth into and just wallow in for a long time, there's so much replay because things can change so much based on what you actually do, and there's stuff that you don't get to do unless you make different decisions earlier on. So you can be going along and discover something new, which also, did you pick up on, I want to see on the, in the Shadow Broker, did you take it the way I did, that they're trying to imply that the Asari bartender on Ilium is actually Liara's other parent?
I feel like I missed something there.
Well, when you talk to her, you know who I'm talking about, right? The one whose father was a Krogan?
Yes.
So if you talk to her and explore all of her dialogue, she says, you know, she's talking about all the different things she's done. She says, I even had a pureblood daughter once. That didn't work out. Just kind of a throwaway line. But then when you get into Shadow Broker, if you look on the video surveillance, there's actually one of her, like, sitting by herself looking at what looks like a picture of Liara.
Huh. I will have to go look at that again. Yeah, I must have just glossed past that one.
So, yeah, somebody actually mentioned that, and I'm like, no, really? And I went back and looked, and I'm like, oh, it is Liara. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be. I will definitely have to investigate that in more detail, because I completely just blanked on that as a thing that was happening.
Yeah. I also did like it when you go in the hotel with her in the Shadow Broker, and you ask her, what is it Oh, there's the line about the slang for the part of Minasari.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, wow, Liara's grown up and got a mouth on her since the first game. I like it.
Yeah, that's like I said, it almost made me rethink my plan to pursue Tali in this one, because they suddenly made Liara more interesting.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they couldn't tear me away from my plan, but yeah. I applaud them for trying. And I'm hoping that means that in the third game, she'll truly be a force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was always fun to use from just a mechanical standpoint. Her character powers and things like that were awesome. But I just, personality-wise, didn't really think much of her in the first game.
Tali and Garrus and Rex were certainly the most interesting squad members in the first game.
Yes. Yeah, I think, honestly, if they had, I don't know, had budget constraints and could only put in two characters, if they had put in Garrus and Rex, most everybody would have been thrilled with it, because that's, I know it's what Din takes pretty much everywhere. That's her away team.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, Rex and it's true is of great a lot of people, because he's biotic.
Hey, Rex is great because he's Rex.
Well, yeah, but from a gameplay point of view, when you have him in your party, he's got the Krogan strength, but he's also a biotic. So he fills kind of two slots at once, which is nice. The one thing I wish they had done more of that they did do in the second Dragon Age game was the party members talking to each other when you're just walking around.
Yeah, that incidental chatter between party members is actually the best thing about the Dragon Age party system, I think.
Yeah, and definitely.
If they give us something like that in Mass Effect, that would be awesome.
I would be so happy.
Especially if they, you know, given who they've got returning as playable characters.
Right. Because that's the thing. I would always take, like, when I was going to see Liara or Rex, I would take Tali and Garrus in my party because I wanted them to chat with each other. But usually they wouldn't say much, and it would make me mad. Yeah. I'm like, come on! But, yeah, it's funny, because in my first Mass Effect 1 playthrough, I did Caden as my romance. Because, I don't know, he seemed kind of sweet, you know, when you talk to him and go through his whole thing. He has trauma in his past, whatever. And Liara was kind of, well, I didn't know that she was ready for the full splendor of Shepard. You know, she seemed a little sheltered. So,
you don't want to traumatize anybody, I mean.
I know, right? You know, I don't know if she's ready for that joining. But, so then I went to the first game, and so I was pretty happy with that. And then I went to play in the second game, and he was so passive-aggressive on Horizon, it really pissed me off.
Yeah, that was pretty much my
experience. I've been dead for 2 years, and you're whining because I didn't call you? Hello?
Yeah, you get pretty much the same speech out of Ashley if you romanced her in the first game.
Oh.
And see, I screwed that all up anyway. I was basically achievement whoring.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I have to sacrifice somebody on that one mission. So I will solve myself any future complications by romancing the one I intend to sacrifice. only, you know, not thinking that through, you don't actually get the achievement and complete the romance until before the very last mission. So I got to the sacrifice point and was like, oh, damn it. I guess I can't just blow her up. So now I have a psycho racist ex-girlfriend floating around the universe.
Yeah, that's always a good situation. But, yeah, so I was so mad about it in my second Mass Effect 1 playthrough, I killed him and kept Ashley instead. And first Liara.
Nice.
I was like, screw you. I'll blow you up on Vermeier if you're going to be that way.
Why don't you sit on a nuke?
Exactly. Like, what about me, Caden? What about my needs?
Seriously. I'm Commander Goddamn Shepard. Shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Yeah, that should have been
that should have been a dialogue choice.
Yes. This is Commander Shepard, and you are my least favorite person on the Citadel, as Ben says.
You get a t-shirt that says, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite t-shirt on the Citadel.
I'm sure it can be done. I was, we recently got new phones, and we were looking for cases for the phones. And BioWare actually has a direct license, like N7 iPhone case.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
I really want that stupid hoodie.
Oh, yeah. The hoodie is also pretty awesome. But we also found is like a somebody's Zazzle store or cafe press store with, you know, stacks of completely unlicensed BioWare merchandise.
Awesome.
Including the iPhone case that just says Queen of Ferelden on the back of it.
I know who wants that one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised it has not already been ordered. It actually lost out to a superhero case of some kind, I think.
So, yeah, the one thing is I like playing on the console, and I have a Mac also, so it makes it harder to do PC gaming sometimes. But
yeah, same here.
I envy the PC gamers is their ability to pull out the audio files and do things with them.
Yeah, I typically will go crawling around in various websites once they've done that
on
the PC side and just grab it because I've you know, converting things to ringtones and all this. Yeah.
I mean, I just feel
Vince
like
Vince phone shouts. is it a message tone or ringtone? I can't remember. It is Alistair basically chanting that he can't hear you.
That's funny. I feel like I need a mail notification that's Kelly telling me there's a new message on my private terminal. Because I'm that much of a geek and I would giggle every single time.
Absolutely. I'll have to go see what I can find. I haven't poked around lately, but also, I'm in enough of a Mass Effect 3 kick. I may need to convert all my material over.
Okay, it's the damn, you know, billion credit best ship in the fleet, and they can't put in an auto fish feeder.
Okay, the fish thing kills me. I can't. I'm like, come on, really? You can't handle that?
Now. Come on.
Yeah.
Flirted with Kelly to make her go feed my fish, and now I'm worried that Liara is going to be mad at me and like hit me with a biotic slam when I see her in Mass Effect 3. You hussy. Yeah,
that's something.
But her picture's still face up, so I must be okay.
And see, I somehow can't ever get the dialogue correct to get her to feed the fish for me.
Oh, what is it you have to do? You have to be flirty with her every time you get the chance to. Like, the way you start the chain is when she says she's, like, that she dreams that she's afraid or something, and there's the choice is, like, I'll catch you, or I'd drop you, or I'd embrace you. Oh. And if you pick the one that says I'd embrace you, that will open up a line of flirty dialogue that you can do. And after, like, three or four different conversations, you can invite her up to have dinner with you. And then the next time you talk about it after, she'll say, ooh, I was up so late. And then you can ask her to feed your fish.
That's really funny. I'll have to try that. Because I buy the fish, and then I clean the dead fish out of the tank. Yes. I've never had to, I was like, fine, I have a hamster. Apparently the hamster doesn't require food.
Yeah.
Because I never feed the hamster.
It's at all, no.
And that's the bigger question. Forget the auto fish feeder. Who the fuck at BioWare thought it was a good idea that I needed to have to feed my fish?
I know!
Like, I don't have enough shit to do? Really? I have to save the galaxy. Somebody else can feed the goddamn fish.
Why can't Edie feed the fish?
Seriously, there's an AI on board, and the fish feeder is automatic and built into the tank. I just have to push a button.
And she's right there next to the fish! She has a little hologram!
Yes, it's definitely a problem.
It must be some sort of Cerberus behavioral test.
You know, I hadn't thought about that. It's the elusive man trying to determine
on, like, how much you let the fish die and if you keep buying them again.
It's like their version of a Voight-Kampff test. That's hilarious. And as Din points out, she passed and I failed. this is true of many tests.
Oh, me. So, yeah, I'm busily trying to decide whether I go into Mass Effect 3 with the Liara all the way playthrough, or the was Caden now Garrus playthrough, or some other playthrough yet to be determined. The one I started today is actually a no-romance playthrough, so that I can have the field wide open should I ever require it.
I think of the choices you specify, the was Caden now Garrus two runs through the game, probably your best bet, if only because it means Caden is dead. And that's never a bad thing.
Oh. Well, no, that's the one where Ashley's dead and Caden's still there. The Caden dead is the Liara playthrough.
I gotcha.
I had Caden, and then I dumped him after Horizon and took up with Garrus instead. And I really feel unnaturally spiteful about it. Like, I wish there were dialogue trees that said things like, well, he's better endowed than you are and better in bed, so ha.
Not enough to throw him over for the Turian. You want to talk shit to him about how inadequate he was.
Yes,
I think that's
a
great plan. And Den's plan is actually her import game is a Garrus romance, so she's going to make her active party Garrus and Caden at all times just to rub it in. So
I mean, I entertain myself by imagining that Garrus is going to send like snippy emails or haha messages or just take pictures of us like on vacation places and anonymously post it to Caden's Facebook or whatever they have in the future.
Facebook. Awesome.
I think a tiny bit over invested in these characters at this point.
Maybe just a little.
But that's the fun part.
Suffice it to say, everybody on my playlist is on my friends list is replaying this game, except the ones that only play shooters.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I love how in the Shadow Broker you can get Garrus's playlist for what he listens to while he's in firefights. That cracked me up.
I think what I found more disturbing was the fact that almost every male crew member on the Normandy 2 had a rental history that included Asari softcore porn.
This is true.
Asari Confessions 26.
Or Viania. That one comes up a lot.
Yeah. That's funny. Pretty sad.
Well, it's funny because like in the Bachelor Party where they're talking about how all the different species think Asari look like them.
Yes. That's really interesting.
They look like blue Turians. Look at the fringe.
Yeah, which makes me wonder what they really look like.
I know. I'm thinking it's some sort of pheromone thing.
Gotta be, yeah. There's an idea similar to that in Babylon 5.
Oh, yeah?
We lost each other again. No, we didn't.
I can hear you.
In that the elder races appeared to everybody as some sort of preconceived, culturally appropriate thing. Like, they look like angels to humans.
Yeah.
And so, it's actually not the only way those two games are pretty... These two worlds are kind of similar. There's a lot of B5 in the Mass Effect universe. In fact, I was reading... there's an article, you've probably read it, I think it was IO9, that had... this guy arguing that Mass Effect was the most important sci-fi franchise of the current console generation or
I read that.
And it was interesting, and it made some great points. I mean, he overstated his case a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's right on a number of points, you know, the whole cosmic horror Lovecraftian angle, which isn't really there in other stuff. But then you know, every time I read one of these points, I'm like, yeah, that's... Oh, hey, B5 did that too. So there's clearly somewhere in the Mass Effect design team, there's some Babylon 5 fans.
Yeah. I do. One thing I like that they brought in Mass Effect 2 was you got more of the different individuals of species looking different from each other.
Right.
Like, I noticed that particularly in the Asari in Mass Effect 2, you have a lot more variation, like, in their skin tones and in their features and in their markings.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like. Like, I'm always kind of annoyed by the every single member of this alien species is a copy-pasted clone of the others that we just swap the color of their clothes.
Right. Yeah, and they've done a pretty decent job. It was pretty bad in the first Mass Effect, especially just the NPC Asari at the clubs. I'm like,
yeah,
oh, hey,
they're
even wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's much better in this one. And I'm looking forward to seeing sort of how much further they push that in 3.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just from what I've seen, the graphics look like they've taken another step up in 3.
Yeah.
They look really good in the demo. Which they should be, because that freaking demo was like a gig and a half.
Yeah, it was a lot more... And I don't know how long it takes. Like I said, I avoided the single player portion, but... I mean, what does it run, an hour?
Maybe it's... Okay, to give you an idea of... the types of stuff you get in the first person demo, it would be similar to if a demo for Mass Effect 2 had given you the Freedom's Progress level, and then like maybe the Haystrom level.
Okay.
It gives you like what is pretty obviously your kind of tutorial start off level, where it's teaching you how to like take cover and do things like that.
Right.
And then
how not to get your ass shot off.
Yeah, pretty much. And then it gives you one where you start off at like level 12 or 13, I think, where okay. You're obviously kind of in the middle of a quest line.
Right. And give you a chance to actually see what you're
doing when you're kind of, mid-level and have some actual powers.
Access to all the tools.
And I did get to play with the Kinect features a little bit, which some of them I'm never going to use because it's things like you can say open to open a door and it's easier to just press A.
Yeah.
But the stuff in combat is actually strangely compelling in that you can yell out, say, cover me, and your party member will go, got it, and actually start doing something.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I watched a couple of videos of people using the Kinect functionality. I don't have a Kinect anyway, so it's sort of a moot point. But what got me is I'm so used to playing with the the wheel of commands and the bumpers and all this kind of stuff. There's pretty much none of that stuff I can't do faster.
Yeah.
Just tapping buttons. But I still, I could see how it would be interesting and kind of maybe more immersive in some ways to take that approach.
I think it's cool
they're messing with it.
Yeah, I think it depends on if you're used to using the bumpers or if you like to do the hotkeys.
Right.
Because I think it's going to be more useful for you if you're doing hotkeys, because you can actually do your own stuff and shout out something at the same time.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. So you basically get people acting at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. And there were actually a couple of things you could do that I didn't actually know how to do with the controls. Like you can tell somebody to move, which I think you can do that with the D-pad shortcuts, but I never would do it before. Like I never kind of got used to using that system.
Yeah.
I'd never think about it. I just let the AIs run along behind me, and I just tell them to overload stuff when I needed an extra shot of shields, So I think I'll play around with that some more. It may be interesting. I do like somebody trying to actually use the Kinect in a meaningful way in a real game.
Sure, yeah.
Because, I'm kind of a fan. I use the Kinect to exercise is the only thing I use it for. I play Dance Central and, do it as kind of a personalized exercise video. Which actually works out fine because I'm working towards gamer points at the same time. So,
exactly.
And it's fun. It's fun in the same way that Guitar Hero or Rock Band is fun.
Right.
So I've enjoyed it for that, but I was always kind of skeptical that there could be a real game that would actually use it in a kind of meaningful way. So I'm interested to see them, kind of trying to push some limits on that.
Yeah, I am too. I've largely... There's a couple of reasons I haven't messed with the Kinect, and one of them is that our sort of living room space where the console and the TV are don't really give a lot of room for that.
Yeah, I do have to be back against the couch to use it. I'm just on the edge of having enough space.
And that's my big thing is we really probably don't have the kind of space it needs. But beyond that, I figure. Maybe future iterations will be a little less space intensive, So I'm hopeful seeing them do interesting things with mainstream kind of games.
I was a big Kinect skeptic, and once we got it, I really was very impressed with how well it works, and the amount of functionality they managed to get into it for the price.
That's actually one of the things that impresses me the most is that it's not really an insanely expensive kind of thing they're having to charge an arm and a leg for. It's feasible and reasonable for the average player. If you've had your console for a while, that's an investment that's already sunk. It's not the cost of a new console or something to get that ability.
It's been something. I don't use it a lot for anything else, but for the things I've been using it for, I've been happy. And it is sometimes fun to play around with the voice controls. Although I still remember, because to trigger the voice commands, you have to say Xbox. And then, so all the commands, it's like Xbox search for or whatever it would be. And at one point we were actually having a conversation in the living room that did not involve doing things, but we said Xbox, and the little like light came on and it lifted its little camera, and we were both kind of like,
the Xbox is watching us.
It was a little creepy. And that's the thing. I had the point where I said, I had Liara in my party, and I was like, Liara, do something. She goes, I'm on it, Shepard. And I was like, whoa. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'll be curious. I've got a friend who has a Kinect here locally, and I may take the game over there and give it a whirl.
Yeah. It's certainly intriguing. So, I don't know, what was... So we've talked a little bit about, you know, compare and contrast, things we're looking forward to. I was actually excited about Arrival. You actually get to see Admiral Hackett.
Yes. Like
actually see him and not just hear him. Which I always kind of wondered why they paid for a name actor for a character that you never actually saw.
Yeah, yeah. It, I was pleased to see him in... where is it that he pops up? No, he pops up in Arrival.
Yeah, he's in Arrival.
Yeah. And
I think he'll be in...
He has a face.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff in the later DLC is based on models that they were making for 3. Because, like, Liara and Shadowbreaker, that's the Liara model that you get in the demo for 3. You know, it's that same blue and white outfit. And her face is a little more refined. You know, so... So I think that they kind of used a lot of those assets as they were starting to be developed for some of those later DLC packs that came out. So that's exciting.
Sorry, I'm processing. I've geeked out sufficiently. I don't know what else at this point to say except when will Tuesday be now?
I know. I got a phone call this afternoon from my local game store, and they're like, you can come in at 10 to prepay and then pick it up at midnight. I'm like, what are you supposed to do for the other 2 hours?
Yeah, and I have to go to work Tuesday, so I'm not doing the midnight release thing.
Yeah. I have this faint hope that I might be able to pull a collector's edition. So I'll probably go just to see if they have one. I have a regular one pre-ordered because they didn't have any more 360 collectors when I pre-ordered. But they said, we sometimes just get a couple in, so you can come see and upgrade your pre-order if we have one. So I'll probably go in right when they have it. And just check and see if they've got the collector's edition. Because I want a robot dog, damn it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my robot dog. my Mass Effect 2 experience, when I went to buy it, went to pick it up, I had pre-ordered the collector's edition. And they had screwed it up.
Oh, no.
So they sat me down for a regular edition. And this is why this particular branch of GameStop will continue to have my business. The manager has known me, you know, as a customer for years, has always just bought all my stuff there. And he's like, well, let me see what I can do, but take, you know, why don't you go ahead and pick this one up? And if we find another one, if I find a collector's edition somebody didn't pick up, then I'll just call you and you can come swap them out and... We'll call it an even trade.
That sounds good.
And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. And so, you know, took the regular one. And it took him almost a full week. I figured he'd call around that night. And if I didn't hear anything by the next day, I was pretty much, you know, it wasn't going to happen. And he called me up almost a week later. And he's like, oh, hey, I found one.
Sweet.
So why don't you come in? And so now he's got there's a note on my little customer account record in their system that if I pre-order an RPG, I want the collector's edition, always. Mm. So I don't have to worry about it anymore. And so he doesn't have to chase other games. I think the copy he finally found was from a store like an hour away from here.
Wow.
You know, somewhere in central Alabama. And I don't know if he had them mail it to him or if he had somebody bring it or send it or if he went and got it. I don't know what happened.
That's commitment.
Yeah, he went above and beyond, so... You earned a little loyalty on that front.
I don't know. I sometimes get collector's editions and sometimes don't. It kind of depends on what the difference is.
Yeah.
Like, I did get the one for Fallout New Vegas, and I really liked it. It was cool. It had all the little poker chips and the special cards and stuff in there.
Yep.
The toys were neat. Like, if the toys aren't that good, I'm kind of eh. But for this, I really wanted it, and they didn't have any more to pre-order available. They had it for the PlayStation 3, but all my games were on the Xbox.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I basically go in for decent toys or any, even little stuff, little DLC type stuff. I'm okay with. I as long as they'll give me something for the yeah. effort, then I'm in. But it's only really RPGs that ever have the toys.
Right.
I looked at the. Actually, what really bugs me is Assassin's Creed, we talked about earlier. Their collector's editions in Europe are amazing. And the versions they release here are lame.
Yeah.
Like here we get a free DLC and maybe a little, bullshit pamphlet art book type thing. Over there, the most recent game, Revelations, had a collector's edition that came with a 400-page, 8x11 hardback encyclopedia of the Assassin's Creed universe.
Oh, wow.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book. It covers everything. The conflict between the Templars and the Assassins and all the weird, ancient history, prehistoric alien race craziness and all the conspiracy stuff. It's this massive encyclopedia. And we got, a free DLC and something stupid,
Yeah. So that's it. I will be in it for the toys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my Fallout 3 bobblehead stands proudly next to my Batman Arkham City statue.
So. Edition of Fallout 3. I hadn't ever played any of the Bethesda games before. And honestly, the only reason that I bought Fallout 3 was because of the art design on the box. Like, all of the all the Vault Boy, pseudo-50s Reagan Gothic stuff.
Right.
I was like, I keep seeing this, and I love the look and feel of it. It looks like this is made by people who are really clever. And I want to try it out, but I'm not sure because I was like, isn't it kind of a shooter? And I'm not really good at those, and I don't really like them. And the dude in my GameStop was like, no, buy it. You'll like it. So I just got the regular one, and I'm so mad now I didn't get the one that came in the lunchbox because I love it so much, and I would have really liked that bobblehead.
And I've discovered, because the lunchbox was designed basically to hold the game, is that it's an excellent container for all these little art books and other shit I get with other games. So my Fallout lunchbox is full of other collector's edition special prizes.
I need to go on eBay and try to find somebody who'll sell me a bobblehead. Hear that, people? Bring me tribute at Dragon Con.
You might even be able to just buy the bobblehead from, they may just offer a version of those for sale.
Yeah.
Anyway, the lunchbox might be a little harder to come by.
Yeah, they were cool. That's why I bought the collector's edition for New Vegas, because I'm like, damn it. I still regret I didn't get the collector's edition for the first game. This one I'm getting. Oh, man.
Well, good luck with your quest to find a copy of ME3.
Thank you. I'm crossing my fingers. I really hope they'll have something extra.
Yes, I will think collectory thoughts.
Yes.
And I promise not to rub it in if you don't find one that I have a robot dog.
Well, if I don't, then hopefully they'll release it as DLC in a couple months and I'll be able to get it late.
Almost certainly, yeah.
They usually do. Always
done that.
I mean, all the little special weapons and stuff eventually became, firepower packs or whatever for the second game, so.
And actually, you've opened up the one last thing on my agenda as far as this game that I wanted to discuss is all the fucking hue and cry about the DLC.
Oh my gosh. Did you see the BioWare discussion page for this? It was 250 pages. Not 250 responses. 250 pages of responses.
Yeah, and here's the thing.
Crying about that.
And the thing that drives me crazy about it, and I've read it a couple, and the gaming websites are just feeding it, and it drives me nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Because they ought to be smarter. I forget which site it was, Joystick or somebody. They decided, we're going to add up what it would cost to get all the Mass Effect DLC. And it's this outrageous number. It's like $900.
What?
And here's what they did, okay?
How can that be true?
Because Razer or somebody has a line of Mass Effect-themed computer accessories, and they all say they come with DLC. And there's a whole series of action figures, and they all come with DLC. And
yeah, but they come with, weapons for multiplayer or something. It's not real DLC.
And see, that's the thing, is all the people that have raged about this, when I fired up the multiplayer demo the very first time, I suddenly went, aha, I knew exactly what they'd done. Because all your gear in the DLC, in the multiplayer, is like you spend money to get these one-use item packs of random power.
Yeah, it's like a Magic the Gathering booster pack.
Right. That's 90% of the stuff is out. And so all these, like, oh, you've got to buy all these action figures. I'm like, well, no, because if you complete one mission, like I've played on the easiest difficulty in the demo, playing one mission all the way through, it's like 10 waves and an extraction from the place.
Yeah.
If you survive that, you will earn enough money to buy 3 or 4 of those same packs.
Exactly.
In one mission. Yeah. So if I want all the DLC that those 8 action figures can give me, I will get it for free in about 30 minutes.
Exactly.
By playing the multiplayer. And so everybody's raging about all this stuff, and it's all just so much. Like, people need to get over this whole DLC nonsense.
This is not the hill you want to die. I mean,
no.
It's the first thing is, it's people who don't understand how software development works. Because they all say, if there's day one DLC, it means they could have put it in the real game and they didn't. But that's not what it means.
Yes, because the programmers are going to quit on Monday working on the game and it will release on Tuesday.
Exactly, right? Whatever. Because they don't realize, because it's not being published, you know, with discs and, you know, they're not having to print boxes and they're not having to do all this other crap. They're not having to press discs. That they have this extra time. They can use some stuff and put in. And there's like, well, it was in the script. That means they had it a long time ago. It's like, have you ever worked on any creative project at all? Do you realize how many ideas get tossed out and then you still liked part of it, so you want to reuse it later?
Or even got halfway down the chain and they went, oh, shit, we're not going to be able to work this bug out in time. Exactly. Excise that storyline. We'll finish it later.
Exactly. Which, have you looked into some of the unused audio clips from Mass Effect 2?
I have not.
I actually, this is how into it I've been. The other day when I was working on the computer, I like put a YouTube playlist somebody had done with all, they had extracted all the stuff that doesn't actually appear in game. Like the Conrad Werner stuff for Paragon, because there's a glitch in the first game where it marks it as you intimidated him whether you did or not.
Right.
So, like, you can actually hear what the files would be if it was a Paragon. And then there's all these different, like, lines of dialogue that don't trigger because they decided you could only get certain party members after a certain point.
Yeah.
So there's, like, the lines where if they had been there for the certain other missions. And then there's a whole bunch of dialogue for the Presidium groundkeeper that you go see in the bar to see if there's a fish.
Yeah.
He has all these lines of hilarious dialogue. I don't know why they cut it, because it's actually really funny. Like, he talks about, he's like, you know what the best thing is about the Citadel? The drinks! My species isn't really known for making intoxicants. There's so much here to explore!
Yes, it's all about the booze, eventually.
It's really funny. And then he starts complaining how Asari keep trying to dance with him, but they have these weird bumps that get in the way, and he just doesn't understand.
Oh, wow.
It's comedy gold. Look on YouTube and find the Presidium groundkeeper unused dialogue lines, because they're hilarious. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, all these people, and this is me, all these people who are like, oh, I'm canceling my pre-order. I'm like, I hope you live in Georgia and it was a collector's edition.
Yes, me too.
I'm like, I'm in line for it.
I am fairly certain that nobody is going to miss that sale that much.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I'm thinking if you buy all the DLC, it's another, what, 20 or 30 bucks for all of the stuff they had for 2?
I mean, something like that. I don't know, because I had the, I mean, most of it was free if you had your service. So if you bought the game new, it didn't cost you anything.
So I bought the game new and I got whatever the service network thing was free. Zaid came with it and he was free. There was a couple other little things, I think, that came and was free. There's some DLC mission, I think, that you get.
Either the Firewalker or Overlord stuff was free.
One of them, yeah. And then I bought... Yeah, I think Firewalker was free. I think I bought Overlord, I bought Kasumi, I bought Shadow Broker, and I bought Arrival.
Yeah.
And none of those, I think, was more than about 10 bucks. I think maybe Shadow Broker might have been like 10 bucks, like the big ones.
Yeah.
But usually it was like, you know, $5 or $3 or something like that. And it was spread out over a long period of time, and it was completely worth it to me to have additional content for that game.
Well, and just to further enrage the anti-DLC crowd, I'm that guy, the one that buys the shit that doesn't do anything if it's cheap enough.
Yeah.
When I fired up the game again a couple of weeks ago to start my playthrough, I had, you know, $5 worth of points laying around. I'm like, ooh, alternate appearance packs. So I'll buy those.
Oh, I totally bought the alternate appearance packs. I wanted Jack to put on a goddamn shirt.
Well, yes, if you want Jack to have a shirt, you do have to pay.
I wanted Jack to have a shirt and Miranda to have clothes that weren't, like, I can see your navel.
Let's say painted on.
Yeah, exactly. So
like,
I
they're like anti-strippers. They start naked and you pay money to put clothes on.
Mike was like, "Why? I thought you didn't like Miranda. Why are you using her all the time?" I'm like, "Oh, I bought her a new appearance that has armor, so now she's properly dressed and I can take her out with me in public."
You are not going off the ship in that, lady.
I know. I love the part where, I forget which mission it is, where there's the Asari that's like, "Well, I thought you would have waited to come out until you were finished getting dressed." And I was like, "Ooh, burn."
Yeah, we'll have to have another one of these here in another couple of weeks when we've all had a chance to burn through that first heady playthrough at full speed. And
I'm
again,
so
we'll want to be involved in that one, I'm sure. Especially when she sees how Garrus's relationship develops.
Oh yes.
Over the
I
next game.
I actually let whatever relationship you have active make some differences in the dialogue.
Yes.
Other than just it's all completely the same except for you can call him up to your room to awkwardly cuddle.
Yeah, I'm hoping they go a little deeper than that. That's the one beef I have. I like that they've got these relationship angles in the game because it makes for some interesting dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But they all sort of like build to the necessary gratuitous cutscene, and then that's it. You know?
Then that's it. There's nothing. Like, I would actually like to see there is an ongoing relationship, so it, you know, maybe you can have different dialogue choices with that person. You know, I'm not asking that you be able to have a have sex button. I just want you to be able to have, you know, relationship-like conversations.
Well, yeah. I mean,
or, you know,
when you're about to go do the crazy life-risking thing, you know, having that one character argue with you or demand to be taken along or...
Right, or just whatever. Tell you to be careful or something, you know.
Right.
There's lots of things that you could do to kind of give it some continuity. And I was mad in Dragon Age too, because I romanced Anders, and oh my gosh, there's a whole other conversation about that. But I was expecting that in the interstitial conversations, there would be some sort of acknowledgement of the relationship, but no, it's all the mages, all the Templars, all the time. Fucking Anders. Apparently I've heard that, what's his name? Fenris actually will have relationship aware dialogue afterward. Which, if I ever could play that game through, which I probably won't because it annoyed me, but if I ever played it through again, I'd probably do him just for
to
that.
Get some variety. Yeah,
just to get some variety. You know, I'm tired of hearing about the stupid mages and the Templars.
I think Den romanced pretty much every available option in DA2 once on the male side.
Well, and then I also did Isabella because it's like a twofer.
Yeah. And that's we'll have to have another one of these when we finally have a release date for DA3, and we're all keyed up on that one, because I enjoyed the first one and I had my issues with the second one, but found it enjoyable enough to play through a couple of times. But it definitely had some soft spots. And
I thought it was fun and I enjoyed it at the time, but. Yeah. It wasn't the one that I'm going to replay over and over and over again.
Right.
And I don't know. The first one I played a couple times, but there were several spots that would get really... Like, I couldn't get through them more than once or twice.
Right. And I'm hoping...
Mass Effect 3 has a lot more... I don't know if it's because it's a little more modular or if it's paced a little better, but I find it easier to revisit. Also because I'm more a sci-fi person than a fantasy person already.
Yeah, and that's part of my thing, too, is I find the... Well, and the continuity in Mass Effect, so it's always about Shepard and the Reapers and those sorts of things. That's a big part of it to me because I liked the Grey Warden story in the first Dragon Age.
Right.
But I didn't really give a shit about Hawk's story in the second one.
Like, okay, who cares?
Yeah, because it was all just such a smaller scope compared, you know.
It's like, now I'm supposed to care about your municipal politics?
Right. And so I'm hopeful that the third game, because it's not supposed to be, at least by rumor, the Warden or Hawk. It's a third thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm hoping, because like I like the mechanics in 2 better and the story in 1 better, and I'm wanting a game where I like both.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping three will be that game.
Gameplay-wise, they did a lot of good things in Dragon Age 2 that I think made it an easier thing to deal with. Like, inventory management, both in Dragon Age 1 and in Mass Effect 1, was a burden.
Yeah.
I mean, by halfway through the game, you were just constant. I mean, I started... If you've played through Mass Effect once, the first Mass Effect, you basically never have to take anything you find. You can omni-gel everything, because otherwise you're constantly getting the little, oh, you have to destroy three things before you can take this chest.
Right.
You know, and it just becomes annoying.
Yeah.
I don't need another Inferno grenade. I have 15 Inferno grenades, and I only can use one.
Yeah, and I thought the second one probably went a little too far the other direction, because, mm-hmm. you know, the cool gear and toys is part of the fun.
Right.
But I am hoping to see that 3 has sort of managed that process.
I'm hopeful because based on, I mean, I don't have any special spoilers, but I've looked at some of the, like, the videos on the website, and it looks like you have actually an armor and a weapon customization bench on your ship where you can, and what you find is, like, pistol scopes and new rifle barrels, kind of similar to what you would get in the first game, but then you actually have a graphical representation where you can kind of fiddle with your actual weapons and customize them, which I like. Like, I liked that in Deus Ex, the mechanic they had for weapon customization. And apparently, I don't know if this is a spoiler, I hope it's not bad, but apparently there is a carry weight in Mass Effect 3. Because when I was playing the demo, there is one of the things that you can put points in. One of the things that affects is your carry weight. I think it's the same one where, you know, there's always the one thing that will give you additional Paragon or Renegade points.
Right.
So I think that skill also gives you carry weight buff.
Well,
so
and
apparently there's going to be some sort of an inventory management system based on weight in the third game, which I'm intrigued by.
Well, and I will say that the in the multiplayer, you see that a little bit. They only let you carry... two weapons at any time, and your choice of weapons, i.e. the carry weight or whatever, affects how quickly your powers recharge.
Oh, interesting.
So it may just be a matter of
trade-offs, like, that way. Yeah,
trade-offs that way. Like, you're not ultimately going to hit the, oh, you're over-encumbered and can't carry anything. It's, oh, you're carrying, you know, a sniper rifle and an assault rifle, so your powers recharge a lot slower.
Interesting. Yeah.
And in the multiplayer, like the infiltrator we were talking about earlier, you know, switching down to the pistol and the submachine gun, my, you know, little cryoblast power that freezes people recharged almost as fast as I could fire it off. I mean, it recharged in like a second and a half.
Oh, that's cool.
But if I carried the sniper rifle, it doubled that.
Interesting.
So that may be how they're doing the carry weight thing, is letting you pick and choose to get to get to the power regeneration trade-off you want, you know.
Yeah, I like being able to pick things and have the trade-offs. I did like being able to customize how your armor looked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe that's stereotypically girly of me, but I like to be able to change the colors of things and kind of tweak it so that it looks the way I like. Because, I mean, I have to stare at this person's ass the whole time. You know, I want it to look the way I like.
Oh, I'll be honest. I passed up improvement armors frequently in the first Mass Effect because I was not going to dress anybody like the pink Power Ranger.
yes, just, what was that line of armor that was pink? I forget.
I don't even remember what it was called. But yeah, I just refused to put, like, I got Ashley, who came with it, out of it as quickly as possible and into something else, and then refused to use it on anybody, except occasionally I would
passive-aggressively put Kate in it.
Yeah, I did that. Because if he was going to whine, I was going to make him wear the pink armor.
I mean, both of them, actually, if you had their whole dialogue and got all their backstory, the backstories I thought were pretty interesting. But you really had to dig for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the title of most boring squad member has to probably go to Jacob.
Yes.
Because he's Landy McBlandtown, and even his backstory isn't interesting.
No, not particularly.
Like, your dad was bad.
Yeah, that's it.
And, that's true. And like everybody else in the entire universe in this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know what it is, because Miranda is marginally interesting, but only marginally.
Yeah.
And it's really just a weakness with their ability to make compelling human characters other than Shepard. Like, the aliens, I guess because they're more interested as
maybe
designers
they have
than
more
the aliens
creative hooks to the aliens or something.
Yeah,
because they have it's... to. I mean, it's all this stuff. Like the whole thing with the Drell and the Hanar is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing where it's like they were saved from extinction because of an ecological catastrophe and they feel like honor bound to stay on their planet and help these people, except for the planet kills them.
Right. So, yeah,
you know,
I don't know what it is.
There's a lot of interesting stuff to chew on in a lot of that backstory. Or the whole thing with the, you know, the different cultures and how they, the values that they have. And it's really... It's so interesting. And then there's all the humans who are just pretty boring.
Yeah, except the ones that you can't actually play.
Yeah.
You know, they could have given us Joker. And that would have been interesting.
Yeah. Well, but you have him for like 5 minutes.
Yes. So I'm hopeful they'll give me something. Though I haven't looked. It seems like there's a couple new human cohorts available in this one.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they're more interesting than previous experience.
We'll see. Yeah. I am interested to see. There's a couple new ones. I'm interested to see kind of who they are and how they play out. Although I think, I mean, I don't know completely, but it seems like your team is pretty much going to be more like your Mass Effect 1 team with just a relatively limited number and a lot of repeats, which I'm okay with. Although I don't know. Most of the people in 2 I could kind of take or leave, but there were a couple I really liked and would like to have more of, like Morden Solis. Like, I love him with his singing and his inappropriate sex advice. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, I've recently passed the singing portion of his dialogue. I have not yet got to his awkward and unsolicited sex advice.
It was great. The first time I played, I was completely unspoiled for it. And I just always will go with all the different conversations because I like to hear what they're going to say. And I hit that one completely by accident. And I just sat there laughing in glee for like 5 minutes afterward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's.
I love you, BioWare. It is a gift.
It's pretty awesome.
But even him, when you do his loyalty mission, has some parts that are really kind of touching and thought provoking. You know, the whole genophage question. You're like, wow, I can really kind of see where you were coming from on that, and yet it's also horrible.
Well, all right. I think I've probably gushed enough for one day.
All right.
And we will have to come back in a few weeks and
stay tuned, dear listeners, for part 2, wherein we all get together and squee about what we've seen, not just what we hope we're going to see soon.
Exactly. Get our post-mortem discussion in.
Indeed.
And in the meantime...
And if anybody has a spare collector's edition, let me know.
Yes, let Kim know immediately.
I want my robot dog. Well, from all of us, 2 of us, and a half from over the shoulder, thank you for listening, and we will see you again soon.
Bye, guys.
Oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru!
This is Kim from NeedCoffee.com. You've been listening to the NeedCoffee.com podcast, The Gru Cafe. If you enjoyed The Gru Cafe and would like to hear more, you can make that happen by doing one, or even better, all of the following. Number 1. Tell a friend about us. Number 2, go to iTunes and write a review of NeedCoffee.com podcasts. Number 3, become a member of NeedCoffee.com. Our goal is to become the world's first 100% reader-supported website named NeedCoffee.com. For more information, please go to NeedCoffee.com/membership. Thanks for listening.